Hello, my name is Eric Lance. I'm a program manager here at Microsoft in the high performance computing team, specifically in the performance team within the high performance team. We work on the high speed networking, the MPI stack, and working with different software vendors to make their apps run as fast as possible on Windows. And of course, look after the performance aspects of the HPC server product itself. I'm going to talk to you today about some of the performance tools that you may not know are available on Windows, and some of those tools that work across a cluster, and how all that comes together to help you identify performance bottlenecks in an application and, of course, address them. So let's get started. First, we'll have a look at the administrative console. This is the console that is used in the HPC server product. This is the version 3 of the console. This is the one that beta is coming out in November of 2009. So check the Microsoft Connect site for that. The center of the console here shows the different nodes that are available on the cluster. In this case, I have a small cluster of 30 nodes. Some information about each, the status, the properties, what network configuration they're in, what operations have been performed on them, when they've been provisioned with the operating system, and that sort of thing. But the part that's really of interest to us at the moment is down here at diagnostics. I'm going to start with some diagnostic tools that are available inside of HPC Server 2008, and then we'll expand that to look at performance monitoring tools to monitor performance real-time, and then finally we'll look at performance profiling tools that kind of take a recording of some events and let you look at it in more detail. So let's start with some of the diagnostics that are available within the product. You can see here that there's a whole set of tests, networking tests that do ping and name resolution server tests, configuration report, that sort of thing. Tests that ensure that the services are running across the cluster and test the cluster configuration. But the ones of interest to us at the moment are these performance tests. An MPI ping pong is used to measure latency as well as throughput. And we'll talk some more about these in a moment, but suffice to say that the advantage of having these tests here in the tool is that not only, and I'll go ahead and run one right now, and we'll run it across all of the compute nodes on this cluster. And we'll say go. We come down here to results, and we can see that this test is running, and we're waiting for the results here. But one of the advantages, as you can see, is that the results of the old tests are also here. And oh, our test just finished. We can click on that and bring it up, and we see a summary of what happened. In this case, we were measuring latency between each network link on the cluster. That is, between each unique pair of nodes, one node talking, ping-ponging back and forth to the other node. And the latency is defined as half of the time it takes for a packet to go round trip. And when we measure latency, of course, we use a very small packet. In this case, it's about a 4-byte packet that we use. And across this cluster, the average latency is 6.6 microseconds in this case. Now, that 6 microseconds is pretty fast for TCP/IP. That's because this cluster actually uses InfiniBand networking gear. InfiniBand networking gear operates at speeds of 10 gigabits per second up to 40 gigabits per second. This particular cluster is kind of older 10 gigabit gear. These values of 6.5, 7, 8 microseconds on the newer gear with the newer gear with newer machines, the Nehalem-based machines or equivalent, we see these numbers drop to about 2 microseconds. But in this gear, for this gear, this is about right. And we can see here also that there's not just the best or average latencies, but also the a whole set of information about the range of latencies. It's kind of histogram data. For this bin here of the lowered upper bound, 76 of the network links were in that range. So you can see that most of the links are about 6.7 to 6.9. The idea here is that if you see, you should see something that looks sort of like a skewed bell curve here if you think about it, if you think of a histogram on its side. And that skewed bell curve is pretty normal. There'll be nodes that are closer to each other or further from each other on the network, not necessarily physically, but on the network, closer or further from each other. And that can have an effect on the latency that you measure. If you see bumps in this curve, like a high number down here at, say, 7.9 to 7.8, if you see two or three bumps, that can mean there's a problem with the switch, or it can mean there's a bad networking cable. It can be a whole range of either software or hardware problems, but this diagnostic information is the first inkling you'll get, and a way you can monitor this over time is you can actually set these up and as tasks and run them regularly. And in fact, you can see here that we have quite a few tests that are here. And for each of these tests, we have that same summary information that we just saw. And then for each of the individual nodes, there's its worst performing link, its worst performing partner. So there's a fair amount of information there just from a simple ping pong test. And these are the built-in tests. One of the cool new features, actually, of HPC Server 2008 R2, that the beta of which is coming out in November that I mentioned. One of the cool new features is the diagnostics framework here is extensible. And we've been working with software vendors as well as networking hardware vendors to develop diagnostic tests so that they're built right into this console. They'll test for a specific application, make sure your application's healthy, installed properly on your cluster. Likewise, for your particular networking gear, to make sure that it's healthy and its configuration is good and the switches are all good, etc. So, and because it's operating within this framework, it's easy to find, easy to run it. The results are kept in a database for you so that you can refer to them if you need to dig back into the history of finding out exactly when the cluster started behaving strangely. So there's a lot of advantages to using the diagnostics that are inside of the product. But those aren't the only diagnostics that are available. In fact, I'm going to use a script here to help me type so I don't have to keep typing as much. But one of the things we can do is that MPI ping pong test that I talked about. The nice thing about that is that it's an application that runs down through the message passing interface, MPI stack, through to the network hardware, over the network, back up. The application doesn't load the CPUs particularly, but it certainly does load up the networking gear and the switches. And so you can use it as your first check when performance isn't quite what you'd want on your cluster to make sure that the network is actually healthy. And there's a command line version of this MPI ping pong tool. And this is our command line way of running it here. We start with job submit, which is the command line way of sending anything to the cluster. We tell it we want to run across, in this case, 8 nodes. This is an MPI job, so we have to call out MPI exec. We want it to generate full curve data, and we want it to stick an XML output file in a particular directory. We'll go ahead and run that. And while that's running, if I come back here to the heat map, you can see that these top 8 nodes here are actually running that ping pong test right now. These second and third numbers that you see here on the heat map, I happen to have set them up for CPU usage. And you'll notice that those numbers were very low through the whole test. That's because InfiniBand is capable of doing RDMA, or remote direct memory access networking. That allows a packet to be sent from one machine to take some chunk of its memory, put it over the network into the memory of another machine without the involvement of the CPU of that machine. It's a way to do networking at very low latencies, very high bandwidth, and with very low CPU utilization. So as we'll see here, ping pong that we just ran, it for those eight nodes, it was ping ponging between all possible pairings of those nodes, measuring latency and throughput for 21 different packet sizes. It did the test 21 times. And the results go to the XML output that we talked about. Now, this is quite a bit of information in this XML file. It starts with some information about the test itself. Then it goes into some summary information about exactly which links had the best and worst latencies and throughputs that were measured. And then, remember, we measured over a whole range of packet sizes, so we can generate latency and throughput curves is what those are used for typically, and we can assess the health of the cluster with those. And so the best link has all of its curve data out here, as well as the worst links. We can go through, and as I mentioned, every possible pairing was tested, and there's all kind of statistics about what was found, and many curves between each of those pairings. So there's a boatload of data here that you can use to dive in to help you understand exactly what's going on with your cluster and identify which nodes are behaving strangely. So that's some diagnostics tools, which is one way to think about performance. The first step is looking through your hardware, making sure that everything's cool on the cluster, that it's stable, that it's performing to the level you expect it. Second step is to do some performance monitoring, to look at the load on the cluster or on a node. And one of the ways to look at load, and it's one that we just saw here with the heat map. And one of the nice things about this heat map is that there's all manner of different variables, so to speak, that we can plot here of disk queue lengths, disk throughput, how much free disk space is on the nodes, how much memory paging is going on, the CPU usage, etc. As you can see here, I've got the number of cores in use. That's when we're running jobs, and the CPU use and memory paging, and we can apply that. And what we're seeing here is a live feed of that information from the cluster. We can also create our own views. In this case, I've created some with the network usage, the CPU usage, and how many cores. And so this is all being populated live. You can look at it in a tabular fashion. You can look at it. We'll come down here and look at like the system calls per second and add that to our display. And so now we're actually seeing for all of the nodes that are out there, all 30 nodes, the system calls instantaneously across the entire cluster being displayed. So you can get a lot of information about what's going on out in the with the load on the cluster in a real-time sense, so to speak. And how is this helpful? Well, as you'll see going forward, just being able to see a graphical representation of the load on the cluster can be very handy. You can not only understand when something's running versus when something's hung, but when it's running in a way you didn't expect it to, when you can monitor the CPU load and the networking load, the memory swapping, all real time, you can really get a sense of how evenly balanced your application is. And of course, balancing the load across the cluster is the way to get the best performance, the shortest solution times out of your applications. But that's not the heat map is a useful tool. It's not the only way in Windows to do diagnostics. If you're looking for performance monitoring on a particular node, on one node, the HPC server or admin console lets you look across the whole cluster. But sometimes you just need to diagnose with a specific node. And so you can define, predefine some of these things. In this case, I've defined one with percent C1 time, which is the amount of time we spend in low power state, and the context switches per second. But what we can do is, and you'll notice this whole thing operates within a browser, which is kind of cool, and it's actually active right now. So I can turn it on, and for this particular node, it's now measuring the percent low power time of the processor and the context switches per second that we're seeing. And we get information about the last value, the averages, the min, rolling average, min, max, and the duration of the measurements. What's more interesting, perhaps, is that even though we're operating inside of a browser on a predefined performance monitoring graph, we can also add additional values. As you can see, there's information on the processor here, and maybe we'll come in and do our add our interrupts per second. And we can look over the total interrupts per second or the interrupts per second for a particular processor. If we don't know what one of these values means, we can show the description, and it shows us a detailed technical description of exactly what this value is. So we'll go ahead and add it for the fourth processor too. But as you can see, there are a whole set of counters in here, performance counters they're called, that operate on SQL as well as the network stack, the process stack, the system as a whole, WMI objects, etc. And you can add these counters, and as you can see here, we've started measuring those quantities as well. And of course, you can dump all this data to a file and bring it up later. You can save the screen image. You can send a pointer to a friend to use this same console on their machine as well. So that's performance monitoring live, so to speak, when we're actually watching the data from a particular node come up on our screen and we can see it. Now we'll talk about a little different kind of performance tool, which is performance trace tools. In this case, we'll use XPerf, which happens to be it's called the performance toolkit out there in the world, but internally we call it XPerf. It's actually the tool that was and is used by the Microsoft developers to performance tune Windows itself. It's pretty comprehensive, as I think you'll see. It's available for download free in the platform SDK for Windows 7 and standalone for the earlier releases. But what we'll see here is I'll be operating it with the command line here. I'm just going to turn it on. I'm going to turn it on to measure a certain set of counters that are grouped under latency. So now it's on. So now I'm going to give it some load. I'm going to run linpack. And if you're familiar with linpack, it calculates the number of floating point operations per second that a cluster is capable of. In this case, I had four processes just all running on this one machine for the purposes of looking at XPerf, because XPerf is not something that goes across the whole cluster. It's on a single machine at a time. But it's still very powerful. And so you can see all this output of the linpack run. In this case, on a single node, I managed in a few seconds here to generate 9.5 giga floating point operations per second. But the interesting part here is as we bring up the XPerf tool, it's now loading in a couple of megabytes worth of log files from just that few seconds that we ran and displaying them for us. It's showing the load on all of the CPUs. This particular machine has 8 cores. We may not want to see all the cores, so we can bring up just those cores that are of interest to us. We can scroll down. We see also the idle states for all the cores. We see the disk usage, the disk utilization, and then here we can even see the processes that we're running. And right here is where my actual Linpack, the Linpack application is used in by the top 500 organization as its measure of how many floating point operations a cluster is capable of. And all the top 500 rankings are, top500.org is where you'll see this data. The top 500 rankings are based on this particular measurement. It solves a linear system of equations, and we'll talk some more about it in a while, but here you can see that this is where my Linpack was actually running. So we can just zoom into that part of the trace file and see the CPU loading. We can even come in here and say we want a summary table. And here's my XHPL, MKL. This is my four processes that we're running on this particular node. And we can even break it down and see within those executables what threads we're running and how much, and then even for specific instances, what CPUs were on, how much CPU load they were putting on the system, et cetera, et cetera. So we can get quite detailed in understanding how the cluster was loaded, but we can also even come in here, say, for the file system data, if we're interested in looking at the file access, which is often a bottleneck for many applications. And here we can do the same thing. We can zoom in on areas that we're interested in, and even for individual entries here, we can see exactly the time the I/O started and stopped, what process was making it, what executable that corresponds to, et cetera, et cetera. And we can see this stuff in a table as well, where we see exactly how much disk time we used, what the file offsets were we were going to, and as I mentioned, even the executables that were making the I/Os. So with the help of XPerf, the Windows Performance Toolkit, you can really dive into doing detailed tracing on one node and the behavior of detailed behavior of your application running on one node. Now, let's talk about what happens when we go across more than one node. Because, of course, a cluster is all about running across more than one node. So what I'm going to do is bring up a little example here. Now, I hope you brought your spectacles because we're going to go through a little bit of code here. This example is the quintessential parallel programming example of calculating pi across multiple machines. So with the help of $10,000, $20,000 worth of hardware, we're going to emulate your pocket calculator. The first thing we do in using MPI, if you're not familiar with MPI, it's a standard interface for doing messaging across between processes on one machine and or processes on different machines. It's a standard. The Microsoft MPI stack is based on the MPitch2 implementation out of Argonne. Argonne has a lot of documentation. Lawrence Livermore's National Labs website has a lot of great documentation. Many universities have great courses on parallel programming and MPI. The MPI's been around a long time. It's not something Microsoft invented, not by a long shot. We just have a version of MPI that we have and continue to tune specifically for Windows to run as best as we can make it run on Windows. So one of the first things any MPI program does is initialize the MPI stack. There's a feature of MPI called the communicator, which is a simple way of having a handle on a whole set of processes out there and funneling communications to a particular set or subset of processes out there. So the idea here is that we're trying to figure out the communicator size. How many processes, how many machines are out there for us to run on? And then there's an individual ID assigned, an integer ID called a rank in MPI terms, that it's assigned to each one of those processes. And it's here the program's figuring out which process it is, and it's called my ID. So then it gets the processor name, and then here's the kind of interesting part, is it does what's called a collective operation, an MPI gather. So here in this one statement, the program is going out to get something called the processor name, collect the processor names from all of the ranks and put them into a variable called all process names or all proc names. For all of the processes that are running as part of this job, meaning the world in MPI terms, the world communicator. So fancy way of saying I'm using one call to go out to a whole bunch of processes and bring some data back and put them in a form I can work with them. That's considerably more than one call when you're doing socket-based programming, and therein lies the advantage of MPI. It's not what I would call a high-level interface. You still have to be very aware of communication and avoiding deadlocks and that sort of thing, but it's certainly a good way to work on a cluster, on an application where you need to communicate as the solution's going on. All right, now let's go back. So we've gathered in all the names of all the machines. Now we're going to actually loop through the PI calculation. The first thing we do is broadcast from one of the nodes out to the rest. How many iterations are going to be used for this? How many integration steps are going to be used to integrate a circle to approximate pi in this case? And then each process will go do its pi calculation. And then here's another one of these collective operations, MPI reduce. In this case, it's not only bringing data from all over the cluster to one rank, one process, but it's also doing an arithmetic operation as it goes. In this case, it's summing them. And then finally, it's reporting out its result. So fairly simple MPI program. It's the one that's in the front of most of the textbooks you'll see. Now, MSMPI has a way of creating a similar kind of trace output. In fact, it uses exactly the same trace mechanism underneath as XPerf. When we saw all of the disk information, CPU information, etc., being streamed out and captured in that file, and then we saw it in the viewer. MSMPI can do the same thing. It can take events, MPI events, and send those into the event tracing for Windows, the ETW framework that's on all Windows operating systems since Vista. It's a framework that you can tap into with your applications to create tracing specific to your application and capture it and view it later. The advantage to using MPI's tracing is that you don't have to change your application. In fact, you don't even have to have the source code for your application to be able to do traces of it and understand its communication patterns and where it might have bottlenecks. For instance, I ran our little PI calculation program, created a trace, and now we're viewing that trace. So this is, I ran it across 12 different processors. And here you can see the ranks, 0 to 11. And this is the activity that occurred on all of them. And you might notice that this tool looks quite a bit different than the last tool I looked at. And that's because this is the Windows version of Vampir. Vampir is a tool for looking at very large traces. It's meant to be used with clusters. It's a really great tool. We use it here in our performance team quite a bit. We work closely with the folks in Dresden who create it. And I encourage you to go, if you haven't checked out Vampyr as a developer, you really need to. If you're going to be doing parallel development, you need a tool like this to be able to see traces across the cluster, and some of these traces that get very large. So as you can see here, we see the MPI initialize, and we can zoom in. That's one of the advantages of Vampyr. It's very fast, even though there's quite a lot of tracing data here. We can zoom in, and we can see the gather going on in the MPI broadcast. This is where the names of the nodes are all being sent around. And then here we see a bunch more activity, and if we're interested in a particular communication, we can even click on that, and we can see when it began and ended, and more information about how large the message size was, etc. Over here, we see a summary of the different functions. The application is what was running for about 46 seconds in this little snippet here. We can move the window here of what we're looking at, and you can see the statistics will change. And quite a bit more of MPI going on in the early phases here. Another view we can use on this that I find especially handy is a chart view. And we can even go in and look at the events and specifically ask for just the MPI events. So now we can see what mix of MPI events was used in just one section, or even across the whole job. Another handy view here is down here a communication matrix where we can see. Let me get a little bigger here. Where we can see the pattern of, make it a lot bigger, the pattern of communication that was occurring across the cluster, and we can look at the number of messages, we can look at the aggregate message volume, meaning the total amount of data that was sent between each of the nodes. And you can see here that it looks like rank 0 and rank 1 were kind of burning up the airwaves, and rank 4 and rank 0. The idea is you can get an idea of how well spread your communication load is. Here again, you don't want any particular one of these ranks taking too much of the load, because the job will tend to the solution will tend to be arrived at no faster than the slowest part of the job. So the slowest rank is going to determine your solution time. So this is a great tool for doing these things. Now I kind of went over pretty quickly the whole idea of creating the trace and waved my hands a little bit, and we went from the source directly to the trace data. Of course, one does need to actually gather that data, and I wanted to show you just very briefly that it's not a difficult thing. In fact, we have some tools to help you. There's a white paper on the Microsoft download site. If you search for trace and MPI, you'll find it there. As part of that white paper, it describes in great detail how to do tracing with MPI across a cluster. And the source for this Trace My MPI script is out there. The Trace My MPI script, does essentially a single thing. It includes this minus trace argument in your MPI exec command. So it's that simple to turn on tracing. Of course, then you'll need to manage those log files that get created, the trace files that get created on each node, and bring them back to one place. And the script does all that for you. So it's a fairly straightforward thing to just do a job submit. In this case, I'm going to go across 32 nodes, and then I'm going to be running Linpack as I did before. So I'll go ahead and start the Linpack job. And as you can see, it's loading up my four nodes, 32 cores. And now, in fact, the the job is done, and it's doing, let's see, it ran as 201, and there we go, there's the trace output. It's translated all the Windows events over into the open trace format used by Vampire, and as we can see, now there's a whole load of trace files. And this is Vampire looking at a real problem. This is Linpack running across 32 nodes, running as fast as it can run. And this is where a tool like Vampire really comes in handy, because as you can see, there's a lot going on one of these runs. And to be able to click down to a particular communication that's happening and find out about exactly from whom to whom, what MPI tag was on it, how large it was, etc. That's a real help, as well as all of the other graphic features and being able to easily move around the file with the timeline that's up here at the top. Can't say enough good things about Vampire. So there's one last thing that I'd like to show you, and that's, what we call the lizard. We spoke about earlier about checking the health of your cluster before you get too carried away with diagnosing a problem with an application. The Linpack tuning wizard, or tuning wizard for Linpack, I guess it's the official name. We call it the lizard for short. The lizard will automatically tune the 29 different input parameters for Linpack to get the best measurement possible from your cluster. It won't make the cluster faster, but it will enable you to get the best possible measurement, the highest possible flop rating out of your cluster, so that you can understand where it's running fast and where it's not. And as you can see, the tool is quite customizable. You can select where you want to run it. You can even select we'll say 5760. You can even select the starting values that, as you just saw, you can decide what tests. There are tests specifically that check out the integrity of the cluster before it goes off to do the measurement. There are a whole set of tuners. You can decide which of those that you do or don't want to run. And then you just go ahead and start it. And as you can see, it will light up the cluster pretty good. If there are any electrical or cooling problems with your cluster, you will find out about them running the Linpack wizard. And so now it's going along trying to optimize those 29 variables. And you can see each of these points here is one of its guesses. It's trying to figure out what's the best combination. And the blue line is the best guess so far. So as you can see, it guessed one that wasn't so good. So it recovered and guessed a little better. And it'll try different combinations, and it'll get better and worse. And eventually, it'll start making its way up to the optimum set of values for this particular cluster, the input values for Linpack. What this means is that you get a decent measurement off your cluster without having to become an expert in Linpack and the ways that it works. So with that, I'll close. This was a quick overview of a lot of different tools, not a whole lot of detail about any one. But I hope this gives you an idea of some places to start and some of the kinds of tools that are available in Windows to help you make your applications run as fast as possible and your cluster run as fast as possible. Thank you much.